The year now coming to an end marks a decade of war in Afghanistan. We're going to spend the next few minutes in a place my reporting has taken me over and over again since the fighting began back in 2001. It's a place where the arrival of the coalition's warplanes was welcomed. Traveling with American allies from the Northern Alliance was NPR's Ivan Watts.
Northern Alliance fighters watched as an American B-52 bomber attacked the Taliban front line.
That front line, just north of Kabul, ran through a vast stretch of lush valleys and graceful mountains, where grapes and walnuts and mulberries once grew. Years before, as the Taliban came to power, they torched the vineyards, destroyed the mud brick houses, and it was said even killed the songbirds in their cages. When I traveled there in 2002, many thousands of people who had been driven out were finding their way back from refugee camps in Pakistan, Iran, and Kabul. The first person we encountered was an old man in a brown turban, smoothing wet mud over the wall that surrounded his long abandoned orchard.
The place where we are living now, they are all in rubble, and there are huge scorpions, and if they bite us, then we would be finished.
Ask about what aid he's gotten. Mizar Gul snorts, "No one has given us so much as a needle." And then he softens. It's hard, but I'm really happy to be back. I wouldn't sell even 1 hour here for a million Afghanis. It's hard to overstate the joy we encountered, mixed with trepidation, on this summer day back in 2002. At the time, we were on a mission to find one man in particular. We were headed for the village of Astalov, famous throughout Afghanistan for its ceramics bazaar, where generations of potters had made bowls and teapots and dishes glazed with a jewel-like blue. I had heard that one potter had come home to a ruined village where the streets were covered with pottery shattered in the fighting. A trek up a hill littered with pottery shards following a man coaxing a donkey loaded with logs leads to Abdul Wakil, just now centering clay on his potter's wheel.
Yes, it is 2 months now that I have returned back to my home and I started making the clay pots.
The return of Abdul Wakil signaled a renaissance for Astalov. He'd been pushing a wheelbarrow in Kabul to feed his wife and four small children and care for the widow and child of a brother killed by the Taliban. And the Taliban had barely departed Astalov when the children of the town were back learning, lined up on benches under UN tents, including Wakil's oldest son and daughter. Here's the school bell, fashioned out of an old rocket shell, echoing the dark and violent past Astalov hoped it had left behind. In 2002, billions had been pledged by the international community to rebuild Afghanistan. Germany promised a schoolhouse to Astalov. South Korea promised to fund a small hydroelectric plant on its rushing river. By the time I returned to the town in 2006, 5 years after the Taliban fled, Astalov was a place transformed. So now when you look down this road, it's really quite astonishing. All the stalls are back up and the pottery's in its place and there's a bakery right there and a clothing shop and everything has doors on it. And there had been nothing. As for our potter, Abdul Wakil, he'd acquired a nice stall on Pottery Row, two more children, and a far more efficient kiln.
It's good. Things are going well.
As we watch, Abdul Wakil pulls a thick knob from the brick to reveal a deep red glow inside.
We only need 10 more minutes to have the pots made.
The last time we were here, almost 5 years ago, you were really having problems getting your pots to market. The roads weren't very good. The trucks weren't coming. Is that still an issue?
We still have the road problem because it's not a paved road. But other than that, it's good because the pottery bazaar has attracted attention. on their days off, foreigners working in Kabul come here to shop for pots. And also in the summer, a lot of families come here to picnic, and they also buy pots.
Over the last 10 years, Astolov has been luckier than most towns in Afghanistan. Its proximity to Kabul meant it hasn't been forgotten by the central government or the aid organizations. And another advantage, as the school principal Abdul Kahar once told me, when the people came back to Astolov, they brought with them their jobs.
People here in Astolov have skills, every one of them, in one field or craft. And that's something that supports security. People want to do their work in a peaceful environment.
And peace has meant progress. Abdul Wakil, in 2011, has a cell phone he uses to order the wood he needs for his kiln. He has his sights set on an electric pottery wheel and presses Made in Astolov on the bottom of his pots. Plus, he has three more sons, 9 children in all.
Do you think your sons, you have so many, will become potters?
I do want my son to be a potter. I train him sometimes. Now he can make glasses, some plates, and some small pots.
Is Omar, are you the one that's interested in being a potter?
Yeah, I want to be a potter, and I'll do the designs. My little sisters also help. They do the art on the small glasses. My older sisters do pots. You see their designs on those two pots.
The ones I'm holding, these really beautiful bowls.
Yeah.
Still, as with everything in Afghanistan, Astolov's gains are fragile. Abdul Wakil says sales of pottery have slowed. Increased violence has meant fewer foreigners are coming. And he's not sure what will happen when the coalition troops pull out.
Now that you have children who are old enough to be looking at their future, thinking about the Afghanistan that they will live in, do you have an image of what it would be, an Afghanistan when they grow up?
It's difficult for me to say anything because everything depends on security and peace. If there is peace in Afghanistan, they will have a prosperous future. But if not, we don't know. What will be their destiny?
A destiny that may or may not be in their own hands. To see pictures of the potter, Abdul Wakil, and his son Omar, go to our website, npr.org.